You are listening to Conversations with Akilah. Please be aware you are getting ready to listen to an episode that is intended for a mature audience only. There may be some topics that offend those who are not ready to hear it or who may be or may have been triggered in the past by certain topics. Please keep in mind, I am not here to offend or disrespect or upset any entity, as my views and my opinions are my own. I will remain respectful, as you can do the same. Thank you. Is this thing on? I'm on. Okay. It's working. All right. Welcome back to Conversations with Akilah. Thanks for tuning in. I appreciate you, whether it's one of you or 1 million of you, you matter to me. I appreciate you taking the time to listen to me, okay? So I want to jump into what I have been up to lately. Not much, if I'm speaking honestly. I haven't been up to too much. Around my birthday, August, yes, and up until I want to say sometime in October, I was just feeling like I was just in the middle of a daze, of a fog, of it was just insane. I was in church one Sunday and it was crazy. And then the thought came to me, I need to take a hiatus from social media. The thought came, 40 days, no social media. And I'm like, 40 days? Like, where'd that come from? That can't be the Lord. I'm like, 40 days? But let me tell you something. It was one of the best things I could have ever done. I wouldn't say I got clarity from a lot of things. Like, I don't think it was anything like that. But I think sometimes we get so caught up in what's going on and trying to stay connected and trying to make this happen and trying to make that happen that we forget about ourselves and we don't know what our own voice is saying anymore. We don't know what our own thoughts are anymore. And social media is a loud, very loud place. And it was exactly what I needed. No regrets, no harm, no foul. And so I'm back, slowly integrating myself back into this medium, trying to get back on the good foot. Every time I want to go into hiding, because I really do, like I really just want to go away into hiding where no one knows me other than those who need to know me and keep it moving. But I know there's more in me than that. So I'm back on the good foot doing what I got to do in general. Taking care of that. Oh, so you see that I'm also doing my Ask Akilah or answering questions that have been asked to other advice columnists or things of that nature. And when I say I love doing that, that is fun for me. And I think we need to have more fun in our life because life can get heavy. Things can get a bit heavy, you know, so we got to learn how to lighten it up. Another crazy thing that happened on right before I went off of social media for the 40 days, my husband was in an accident where our car was totaled. And my gosh, that was something. Now, don't get me wrong. I'm tremendously grateful he walked away. Everyone walked away that was involved in an accident. Thank you, Jesus. But to not say I wasn't pretty, I don't want to say traumatized, but pretty, you know, shaken up by all of it would be an understatement. That was a pretty harrowing time, and still trying to navigate out that time has been something too. But to God be the glory, my husband is here alive and well, and I have, you know, nothing else I could ask for where that is concerned. So that has basically been what's going on. I went to Miami for our 13th wedding anniversary, and y'all, why I ain't tell me Miami was so lit? Miami is litty. I mean, I've been to the best of places, like islands and all that other stuff. I haven't been to Europe yet, getting there. I've been to Vegas, you know, but Miami, I had the perfect time there. Like, I got what I needed. And it wasn't even long. Like, it was a real quick trip. We were blessed. We were able to stay on the actual strip. So we stayed in South Beach. I didn't even know where South Beach was, child. I was in the Uber on the way to the suite, and I was like, "Where is South Beach?" The guy turned around and was like, "Miss, this is South Beach." I was so embarrassed. I said, "Oh, okay." Mark is looking at me like, "Babe, you should have just asked me that." Like, why did you ask him? But Miami was everything. The weather wasn't the greatest. We got caught in the rain twice. But that still didn't deter from the beauty of the place. The food was so good. I still didn't get to eat all the places I wanted to eat, but y'all, we went to this little diner. So we went to the expensive places, but none of that food compared to this little diner that we went to. It had the food, y'all. It was so good. Mark was like, "Babe, you want to go back there again?" I'm like, "Yeah, I do." It was so good. And I'm really thinking about just booking a flight to go down there for a day so I can get food from there again. Because see, Uber Eats not gonna deliver from there. Grubhub ain't gonna deliver from there all the way to New Jersey. But the food was amazing, and I would definitely want to go back to Miami. I feel like that would be a yearly trip for me, for him, for us, whatever, the kids. I don't care. Miami was lit. Oh, the beach was gorgeous. Oh my God. The beach was beautiful. Oh, and then my sister drove down from Tampa and joined us. Shout out to my sister Crystal. She joined us, and that was dope. So yeah, we had a blast. I had a good time. I'm trying to say, like, my life ain't all of that, but it ain't whack neither. It ain't that either. So yeah, that's basically what I've been up to outside of work and still getting my walks in. 'Cause y'all don't play around with my walks, y'all. I don't play around with my walks. You would think that I'm doing it for my physical health, which and I am, but I'm actually aggressive with my walks because of my mental health. My best friend can tell you, my sister can tell you, when I stop walking, my mood changes. I don't know what it is about it, but I am somebody who needs to go on her walks at least 2 to 4 times a week. And I have stopped trying to fight that. It is what it is. I'm gonna do it. It's not easy. I have involved an accountability coach with this. Yes, the coach, me, has involved another coach because I am a vessel for so many other people where accountability is concerned that, you know, honestly speaking, sometimes it's hard to leave something for myself to hold my own self accountable. So doing the right thing, I brought in support, and I'm working with someone, and she sends me a plan every week, and we have 4 scheduled walks on that plan, and I try my best to keep up with that. I have 3 like medium length walks, and then I have 1 long walk every week, and I've been trying to keep up with that. And I've been doing good so far. My longest walk so far in one setting has been 8 miles, and y'all, it's not as hard as I thought it would be, but it ain't easy either. You know, I'm realizing now that it's more mental than physical. Like, my body won't be hurting, my legs won't be hurting, but in my mind, I'm like, "Oh my God, I still have another mile to go. Oh my God, I still have to do this." Like, oh my God. But it's worth it. Worth every dime, worth all the time that I take to do it. Grateful, grateful, grateful. So I think that is everything that I have. I'm recapping that I have been dealing with since I last graced you guys with my voice through this medium. Okay. So I'm gonna wrap up the bell hooks salvation book. I'm gonna wrap it up at chapter 10. Now, y'all know how I feel about bell hooks. Y'all know how I feel. There is something about her writings that grip me on the inner, deep inner parts. And it is hard for me to finish one of her books right away. I do not know why. Like, I think I know I have the All About Love series all together. I have everything. I have Communion, I have this book, Salvation, and then I have the first book, which is All About Love. And then I have the start to a few other series. And I just be looking at those books like, at this point, I'm gonna just have to read a page at a time because I'll try and read like 2 pages and can't handle it. Let me tell you something. Like, her words, God bless the dead, because she has passed on, but her words grip me in such a, what's the word? I gotta find a word. Like, I don't know exactly what the word is, but her words make me feel things I'm not comfortable feeling. Let me say that. And it could be vulnerability. I was thinking about it in the shower the other day. Like, why am I having a difficult time reading the bell hooks books? And I'm like, is it because that level of vulnerability she's talking about in many of those books is something that as a woman, as a Black woman, as an Afro-Caribbean woman, I'm just not familiar with? Is it that? Is it the concept of love she's talking about, even just mutually? Is it foreign? Is it something that I didn't grow up around? Is it something that made me uncomfortable? Maybe that's why I didn't grow up around it. I don't know, but her books have a profound emotional reaction inside of me. That's the best way I can explain it. And here I am thinking, okay, I'm going to close out the bell hooks book with chapter 10. And the name of that chapter is Heterosexual Love, Union and Reunion. I'm like, oh, this is going to be easy. Okay, I'm just going to close it out. I'm just going to, you know, be done, blah, blah, blah. Ciao. I took out my highlighter and I started reading this chapter. And let me tell you something. I could have highlighted the whole chapter. And I know you guys have heard me say that before, but I legitimately mean that this time. Like, I could have highlighted the entire chapter. She is so on the money about so much she wrote in that chapter. And her talking about the heterosexual aspect of love was not her excluding the LGBTQ community, because she does have chapters on that too. But as a heterosexual woman, as a woman who's grown up heterosexual and all of that stuff, reading and around heterosexual relationships, reading all of that was just, whoa. So I'm gonna begin with the first place that I highlighted. So before, let me backtrack a little bit. So of course she talks about the experience of love and unions between the Black female and male and Black male, going back to slavery, of course, and how many of that was shaped around the white supremacist system. And, you know, many of the slaves were not allowed to be married. Many slaves were not married. That's why they had these rituals during the ceremonies to prove that they were married. They weren't able to have that togetherness legally, although they fell in love. They weren't allowed to, you know, be a family with, you know, this child, this is your mother, this is your father, this is our kids. No, it wasn't like that for them. However, the oppression didn't stop Black slaves from falling in love with each other. The oppression stopped Black slaves from being able to express said love in healthy ways. And unfortunately, as we know, those patterns have trickled down into the subsequent generations after them. So she goes into all of that, and it is a pretty deep read. She says, any Black male, free or slave, who wanted to have a union with a Black woman had to confront the reality of slavery and indentured servitude. You know, that's real. Like, it's hard to feel empowered as an individual when you have the hard hand of slavery, the abuse of slavery over you. It's really hard. Another part I found interesting, although I'm not gonna read, I didn't highlight anything from these parts, because I feel like if I was to talk about these aspects, I would have to go a little bit deeper into the history of them. But she talks about Betty Shabazz's relationship with Malcolm X. And, you know, I found that very interesting because in one of my Habiba Kande podcast interviews, he and I discussed that. And remember, excuse me, he opened up my eyes to how the relationship between Betty Shabazz and Malcolm X was not as, what's the word? It wasn't as cozy. It wasn't, I mean, not that, you know, it couldn't be who he was, but it wasn't as loving and supportive as many would have thought it would have been. There was a lot of subservience in that relationship. There was a lot of control in that relationship, and it wasn't as much. And as you know, even when Habiba Kande told me about it, there was a lot of sexual dissatisfaction in that relationship, and it made me laugh because I'm like, oh, you know, Betty wasn't pleasing Malcolm. He's looking at me like, no, it was Betty who wasn't pleased with Malcolm. okay, Betty was like, yeah, he's not, no, this ain't it for me. Okay, he needs to get it together because this is not it, and we need to figure this out. That part reads, Shabazz shared that her husband told her before they were married that it would be very difficult for him to tell a wife where he was going, and when he was coming back, that he was driven by the fear of a woman having control. And Betty confessed, when we got married, I never asked about his whereabouts. Shabazz unwittingly shared that her husband's undesirable traits, even as she described the marriage in glorious terms, waxing eloquent, I knew he loved me for my clear brown skin. It was very smooth. He liked my clear eyes. He liked my gleaming dark hair. I was very thin, and he liked my black beauty, my mind. Of course, nothing in this piece would offer a reader who did not know Malcolm X information about his politics, philosophy, or activism. At the same time, there is no information about what was actually on Betty Shabazz's mind. We do not know from this discussion whether her political vision was similar to her husband's, whether they talked politics, and so on. Very true. That is very true. And when she goes on to talk about Martin Luther King, I'm not going to lie, I've heard about Martin Luther King's sexual infidelities, but I have never researched it. I don't know if that's something I'm ever going to dive into. I will never say never, but right now that's not on the to-do list. Okay. But I have heard about it, and I heard it's pretty extensive too. Like, homeboy was getting down while he was, you know, saying let freedom ring. Like, he was doing his thing. He definitely was. All right, let me go into my highlighted parts. Oh, this first part, y'all, took me down. I gotta read this whole thing, so I hope y'all got time. I hope y'all got time. I really do. This is on page 174, chapter 10. Many black males share Malcolm X's fear of being controlled by a woman. This fear often stems from childhood experiences where mothers smothered, that's in quote, their sons using ties of affection to bind and control them. The all-giving mother who meets her son's every need tends to also seek to shape and control his actions. As a child, the male may fear that any attempt to assert autonomy will cut him off from his mother's affection. So he conforms to every wish, even as he may feel rage at her possessiveness. To please mom, young black males often create a seductive false self, which they use to manipulate and work around the domineering, controlling mother. The idealization of black mothers as the epitome of femininity has always made it difficult for black males either to critique their mothers, even when they are dominating and abusive, or to resist symbolically assuming the role of the surrogate lover. Guys, let me tell you, I ain't done yet, but ha ha. Okay. Lots of black mothers look to their sons for the effectual engagement that is often not there between them and their grown black male peers. These mothers are often afraid of losing their sons, and especially of losing their power and influence over them. To protect and keep their bond primary, they may teach the male child from an early childhood to regard all other women negatively, to see them as destroying predators. She ends this passage with, this is emotional incest, and all incest is abusive. Shut the book after that. Guys, that's like the fourth page in this chapter. Like, who is this woman? Who was this woman? Like, what? The way she put that together is so true. Like, wow. And as a mother of a young Black male, talk about being put in her place, like making sure I don't do that, okay? Because I don't want my son. I mean, I don't know how I feel about him putting me second to any girl, don't get me wrong, but I also wouldn't want him to feel like he couldn't be open with me honestly about his feelings because he's scared of me. Like, I wouldn't want that, you know? But gosh, a lot of women, unfortunately, it's not their fault. This is not about judgment. This is about awareness, have turned their sons into their man. Minus the sex, minus, you know, all of that stuff. They are their man. This the man of the house. This my little da-da-da. No. And let's be real. We've all seen it somewhere, somehow. We have. Don't act like that. I know you like, oh, she bugging. Akil ain't talking right. What is Bell Hooks talking about? No, be honest. We have all seen this behavior somewhere, if we are being honest, right? And she just so explicitly, I mean, she just explicitly stated that. I know, personally speaking, many mothers who have ruined their sons for any woman to come into their life. And it ain't just because they spoiled. It's that indoctrination of there is nobody like your mother. There's nobody you gonna treat like your mother. Da, 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 da. And what that part about the domineering aspect, because that that dynamic of I love my mother, but I also don't like the fact that she smothers me, that can really become a mind control situation. Like, how do I govern that? And oftentimes most men just give in, although they're not happy with their mother, although they, you know, want to move away from that, they just give in because they can't fight anymore. And then when they finally take a stance against their mother, it's the end of the world for the mother. Not realizing that this is an empowering emotional maturity for the son. The mother feels rebuffed. And oftentimes the mother feels rebuffed because A, she ain't got no man, or B, she got a man who don't treat her right, who don't love her the way she wants to be loved, who doesn't put her first, who doesn't treat her, you know, with love or whatever. Wow. And remember, this chapter is about relationships, the heterosexual relationship. So this is on par. If a man has the concept or has these concepts going into relationships, it's going to be difficult to have a healthy relationship. Okay, I'm going to go on to the next page. No, the next highlighted area. Let's see. You know, she mentioned Jada Pickett. Oh God, and Will Smith. Oh, God bless her. She's, you know, she's no longer on this earthly plane, so she won't know what happened with them. But she did go on to mention Ruby Dee and Ossie Davis, and by all accounts, they had a very respectful marriage out in the open and in private. However, believe it or not, there was sexual infidelity in their relationship, and it goes to talk about. She talks about the reason why they were able to, why it's not so much infidelity or adultery that breaks up the marriage, is lying, because there's no honesty, there's no effective communication. Y'all know how I feel about honesty and effective communication. My next highlighted area reads, as long as Black heterosexual relationships are primarily seen as settings for competition and struggle, love cannot become the order of the day. Many Black folks, especially males, like to imagine that if all Black women and men would just conform to the sexist roles assigned them, everything would be harmonious. Black families would thrive. In reality, patriarchal Black households where women are subservient and the male is in charge, providing, protecting, are often loveless. Love cannot prevail when one person must suppress his or her subjectivity, desires, and feelings in order to please another. And when this does not happen, patriarchal men often still feel dissatisfied, still feel an emotional lack. They may try to fulfill that lack by seeking relationships outside their primary home, creating an atmosphere of secrecy and mistrust that ultimately erodes intimacy. Oh my God. All too often in Black heterosexual relationships, dishonesty is not seen as counterproductive. Oh, let me read the quote that she put. I just found it about Ossie Davis and Ruby Dee in their autobiography together. They shared with readers that values that have helped them sustain a long and loving marriage, speaking openly about extramarital affairs, they state, it occurred to us from observation, from reasoning, that extramarital sex was not what really destroyed marriages, but rather the lies and deception that invariably accompanied it. Mm-mm-mm. Despite the longevity in most marriages between Black women and men I witnessed growing up, men in those marriages regularly cheated on their wives. Conventional patriarchal assumptions about the nature of masculinity, masculine sexuality, justified male sexual roaming. Mm-mm-mm. Now that's true. That's why we got so many babies out there and women who don't know who the fathers are, because Papa was a rolling stone, and that's a real thing. Like, and it's no. I don't blame anyone in this. Like I said, it's not about judgment. There was a lot going on. When I settled down in a long-term relationship with a Black male who respected my rights and with whom I had open and honest communication, his male friends ridiculed him for being whipped. In their minds, a real man would not share his feelings and thoughts or explain his actions to a woman. After more than 10 years, sexist thinking prevailed in our relationship and we parted. Though politically progressive about the issues of race and class, when it came to the issue of gender, this partner, along with the majority of Black males I have dated, wanted a woman whose primary reason for living was meeting his needs, particularly sexual needs. Y'all, this, it's so much to say. Like, I could do one podcast episode with another person just on some, like, just one of these quotes from this one chapter. Like, and I know it sounds like it's a berating of the Black male, but it's not. I think it's very eye-opening, and like I said, if we are being honest, very true. Next quote. Obviously, we live in a society that remains white supremacist, capitalist, and patriarchal. As long as these systems dominate all of our lives, Black people, and especially anti-sexist Black couples, will always need to vigilantly create the alternative ground where our love can grow and flourish. Much of what we encounter in mainstream culture will militate against this love. More and more Black people are internalizing a negative vision of Black heterosexuality, unless we continually and collectively challenge this construction of our bonds as always, and only predatory and rootless, all signs of love between Black women and men will be erased. I tell you, that white supremacist thought, this is not about the individual white person. This is about white systemic ideals that everyone falls underneath, believe it or not. Some benefit more than others, and we'll leave it at that. However, it's there. Like I said, I could go on and on and on about all of this. Now, wait, let me, before I go on to the next quote, I just want to make sure I have everything. I want to make sure I have it all for you guys. Because if not, I think you guys should go and buy this book. Honestly, I think this is a book you should buy. This is a book you should invest in, go back to from time to time, because, oh my goodness, like, she was right on the money. I wish she was still on this earthly plane so I could interview her, so I could sit down and talk to her, glean from her mind. But right now, all we have are the books left over, and I am gonna definitely do my part to continue to put her work out there in any way that I can. You know, I think I'm gonna do that. I'm gonna look for somebody who has done even a deeper dive on bell hooks than me to have some of these conversations with her, because yeah, this is deep. This is some deep stuff, and it's true. We messed up. We're pretty messed up in some places, especially where love is concerned, how the Black woman is viewed in a relationship. She talks about why some Black men were interviewed, and they talked about why they preferred a white woman over a Black woman. And I didn't highlight this part, but sometimes, you know, when I look at a Black woman, I think about my mother, and being reminded of my mother reminds me of, you know, the domineering and the aggression she puts on me. And when I'm with a white woman, I don't feel that way. Yeah. I'm telling you, I could have highlighted this whole, I thought I highlighted the part where she talked about what she saw growing up in her home, because I thought that was pretty good. But I can't find that right now. Who knows, maybe I read it somewhere else and that's why I can't. But I'm going to read the second to last quote I highlighted. Black consumers have become complacent. A movie or book that has Black characters is often hailed and celebrated no matter its quality. Trashy work by the McMillan sisters, I don't know who that is, or by male author Omar Tyree, like the guy who wrote Fly Girl, I thought Fly Girl was deep. So me and Bell Hooks, I'd have to challenge her on that, are often wrongly viewed as serious literary work. Where our books of love letters are biographical and fictional narratives of complex love relationships, where are our books, of love letters, our biographical and fictional narratives of complex love relationships between Black women and men? Hold on one second. Because y'all, I've been reading this new author. Her name is Love Belvin. Y'all need to remember this. Her name is Love Belvin. And by the hook or by the crook, she will be on Conversations with Akilah. Because when I say I am obsessed, hooked, I can't get enough of her books, oh my God. So I could answer Bell Hook's question with her books. Because when I say she does development, she does character development, she does all of that. Oh, and it's Black love. It is Black love. Okay. Where is our continued support of this work when it appears? I support Love Belvin. If this work already exists in the shadows, then it is our responsibility as progressive Black people to bring it into the light of day. This is no simple task.
When I chose to write a memoir about my longtime relationship with a Black male writer and intellectual, I received criticism from conservative Black thinkers, male and female, who raised issues about the importance of privacy. Who without even reading the book, tried to suggest it was an attack on the brother.
Ja, you can't even, and I, like I said, I get it. Our Black men are beat up down there, out here. They are beat up. They've had their hands handed to them. Like, it's been tough for them, but they ain't perfect either. And all of us need to be reminded of that, of our own imperfections. Amen. To end, this is the last quote. To ensure the future of Black heterosexual relationships, we need to stop the secrets and lies. We need to talk openly about how Black men and women relate, about ways class differences inform our attitudes about love, about the addiction to male domination that is strong among Black men of all classes. We need to create the cultural space to talk about the love relationships we have that are fulfilling and satisfying. In some cases, we must see the sacrifice of privacy as part of the anti-racist, anti-sexist resistance struggle, wherein critical vigilance requires sharing our positive and negative stories. We can only decolonize our minds, let go of the images and lovelessness that daily bombard our psyches by erasing those images and putting in their place representations of care and affection of Black women and men bound to everlasting ties of mutual love. Guys, this has been a journey with this book for me. That was the end of chapter 10 of Salvation, Black People in Love by Bell Hooks, author of All About Love, which is a series. I am moved. It was a refreshing read for me, as much as it was a gripping read. It was very refreshing. And I'm not sure what my next book on here is going to be yet, but I definitely want to come back with another book along this vein. It won't be a Bell Hooks book because I can't handle it. I can't handle it. I cannot handle another Bell Hooks book, but it was excellent reading it. For all of you who have stayed with me throughout the duration of this series, thank you, thank you, thank you. It was amazing. A lot of this I knew, but to have it reinforced by someone who I know knows way more than me is a pleasure. And it's extremely validating. I don't think I'll ever reach the pinnacle Bell Hooks reached, but to be along to read her works and the things that she left behind, I'm forever grateful that she put it to paper. I really am. I'm gonna leave you guys with this quote that I found from Bell Hooks that really sums up everything. And it reads, to truly love, we must learn to mix various ingredients: care, affection, recognition, respect, commitment, and trust, as well as honest and open communication. And what else is there to say? If you don't agree with that, I would love to know what your version of experiencing the heights of love to experience true love. Tell me. If you don't agree, tell me. If you do agree, tell me. Email me at AkilaPeinado@gmail.com. Go on Instagram. I'm at AkilaPeinado. You can find me there. You know what I mean? Let's talk. It's been a pleasure. Thank you all for riding with me. If you stayed till the end, thank you for listening. Be sure to tune in for another episode. Until then, see you later. You just finished listening to Conversations with Akilah, where I have a lot to say. Okay? Please be sure to tune in every Friday where you can have a conversation with yours truly. We'll be talking about any and everything. Nothing is off the table. Please remember to share this
and like it and comment everywhere podcasts are heard. We are on Apple, we are on Spotify, you name it. Your like, your comment, your share will help this podcast grow. I appreciate you. Thank you.